Now, Hutgudabi ran full into von Schiller around a corner of the maze, and in a peculiar way the old man's presence, even though he was of no conceivable value in this crisis, steadied him and kept at bay the panic that threatened at any moment to boil over and overwhelm him. Without Hansett, the maze was a weird and lonely place. Any human company was a blessing. For a moment the two of them clung together like children lost in the forest. Von Schiller still carried part of the treasure that they had been examining when Hansett had panicked and run. He had Pharaoh's golden crook in one hand and the ceremonial flail in the other. "There is a monk!" he screamed at Gudabi. "Why did you run off and leave me? We have to find a way out of these tunnels, you idiot! Don't you realize the danger?" "How do you expect me to know the way?" Nahut began furiously, and then broke off as he noticed the chalk notations on the wall behind von Schiller's shoulder and for the first time realized their significance. "That's it!" he exclaimed with relief. "Harper or the Alcima woman have marked it out for us. Come on!" He started down the tunnel, following the signposting. However, by the time they came out on the central staircase, almost an hour had passed since Hansett had left them. As they hurried down the staircase into the long gallery, the sound of the river rose to a pervading hiss, like the breathing of a sleeping dragon. Nahut broke into a run, and von Schiller staggered along behind him, his aged legs weakening with fear. "Wait!" he shouted after Nahut, who ignored his plea and ducked out through the opening in the plaster-sealed doorway. On the landing, the generator was still running smoothly, and Nahut did not even glance at it as he hurried down the inclined shaft in the bright dazzle of the light bulbs along the roof. He turned the corner, still at a run, and stopped dead as he realized that the tunnel below him was flooded, right back up to the level of the ancient high-water mark on the masonry blocks of the walls. There was no sign of the sinkhole or the pontoon bridge. They were submerged under 50 feet or more of water. The Dandira River, guardian of the tomb down all the ages, had resumed its duty. Dark and implacable, it sealed the entrance to the tomb as it had done these 4,000 years past. "Allah," whispered Nahut, "Allah have mercy on us." Von Schiller came round the corner of the tunnel and stopped beside Nahut. The two of them stared in horror at the flooded shaft. Then slowly von Schiller sagged against the side wall. "We are trapped," he whispered. And at those words Nahut whimpered softly and sank to his knees. He began to pray in a high nasal sing-song. The sound infuriated von Schiller. "That will not help. Stop it!" He swung the golden flail in his hand right across Nahut's bowed back. Nahut cried out at the pain and crawled away from von Schiller. "We must find a way out of here," von Schiller's voice steadied. He was accustomed to command, and now he took charge. "There must be another way out of here," he decided. "We will search. If there is an opening to the outside, then we should feel a draught of air." His voice became firmer and more confident. "Yes, that's what we will do. Switch off that fan and we will try to detect any movement of air." Nahut responded eagerly to his tone and authority and hurried back to switch off the electric fan. "You have your cigarette lighter?" von Schiller told him. "We will light tapers from these." He pointed at the papers and photographs that Royan had left lying on the trestle table by the doorway. "We will use the smoke to detect any draft." For the next 2 hours they moved through all levels of the tomb, holding aloft the burning tapers, watching the movement of the smoke. At no point could they detect even the faintest movement of air in the tunnels, and in the end they came back to the flooded shaft and stared despairingly at the pool of still black water that blocked it. "That is the only way out," von Schiller whispered. "I wonder if the monk escaped that way," said Nahut, as he slumped down the wall. "There is no other way." They were silent for a while. It was difficult to judge the passage of time in the tomb. Now that the river had found its own level, there was no movement of water in the shaft, and the faint and distant sound of the current running through the sinkhole seemed merely to enhance the silence. In it they could hear their own breathing. Nahut spoke at last. "The fuel in the generator. It must be running low. I did not see any reserves." They thought about what would happen when the small fuel tank ran dry. They thought about the darkness to come. Suddenly, Von Schiller screamed, "You have to go out through the shaft and fetch help! I order you to do it!" Nahut stared at him in disbelief. "It's over 100 yards back through the tunnel to the outside, and the river is in flood." Von Schiller sprang to his feet and stood over Nahut threateningly. "The monk escapes this way. It's the only way. You must swim through the tunnel and reach Helm and Nogo. Helm will know what to do. He will make a plan to get me out of here." "You are mad." Nahut backed away from him, but Von Schiller followed him. "I order you to do it." "You crazy old man." Nahut tried to scramble to his feet, but Von Schiller swung the heavy golden flail, a sudden unexpected blow in Nahut's face that knocked him over backwards, splitting his lips and breaking off two of his front teeth. "You are mad," he wailed. "You can't do this." But Von Schiller swung again and again, lacerating his face and shoulders, the heavy golden tails of the whip cutting through the thin cotton of his shirt. "I will kill you," Von Schiller screamed, raining blows on him. "If you don't obey me, I will kill you." "Stop," Nahut whined. "No, please stop. I will do it. Only stop." He crawled away from Von Schiller, dragging himself along the floor of the tunnel until he sat waist-deep in the water. "Give me time to prepare," he pleaded. "Go now," Von Schiller menaced him, lifting the whip high. "Very likely you will find air trapped in the tunnel. You will find your way through. Go!" Nahut scooped a double handful of water and dashed it into his own face, washing away the blood that poured from one of the deep cuts in his cheek. "I have to take off my clothes, my shoes," he whimpered, pleading for time. But Von Schiller would not allow him to leave the water. "Do it where you are standing," he ordered, brandishing the heavy whip. In his other hand he held the heavy golden crook. Nahut realized that a blow from that weapon could crack his skull. Standing knee-deep at the water's edge, Nahut hopped on one foot as he pulled off his pants. Then slowly and reluctantly he stripped to his underpants. His shoulders were deeply scored by the lash of the flail, fresh blood welling up and slithering like scarlet serpents down his back. He knew that he had to placate this crazy old madman. He would duck under the surface and swim a short way down the tunnel, hold on to the side wall down there for as long as his breath lasted, and then swim back. "Go!" Von Schiller shouted at him. "You are wasting time. Don't think that I will let you get out of this." Nahut waded deeper into the shaft until the water covered his chest. He paused there for a few minutes as he drew a series of deep breaths. Then, at last, he held his breath and ducked below the surface. Von Schiller stood waiting at the edge of the pool, staring down into it, but unable to see anything beneath the black and ominous surface. In the lamplight, Nahut's blood stained the surface. A minute passed slowly, and then suddenly there was a heavy swirl beneath the waters, and a human arm rose through the dark surface, hand and fingers extended, as though in supplication. Then, slowly, it sank out of sight again. Von Schiller craned forward. "Gudabi!" he called angrily. "What are you playing at?" There was another swirl below the water, and something flashed like a mirror in the depths. "Gudabi!" Von Schiller's voice rose petulantly. Almost as if in response to the summons, Nahut's head broke out through the surface. His skin was waxen yellow, drained of all blood, and his mouth gaped open in a dreadful, silent scream. The water around him boiled, as though a shoal of great fish were feeding below. As Von Schiller stared in incomprehension, a dark tide rose up around Nahut's head and stained the surface a rose petal red. For a moment Von Schiller did not realize that it was Nahut's blood. Then he saw the long, sinuous shapes darting and twisting beneath the surface, surrounding Nahut, feeding upon his flesh. Nahut lifted his hand again and extended it towards Von Schiller pleadingly. The arm was half-devoured, mutilated by deep half-moon wounds where the flesh had been bitten away in chunks. Von Schiller screamed in horror, backing away from the pool. Nahut's eyes were huge and dark and accusing. He stared at Von Schiller, and a wild, cawing sound that was not human issued from his straining throat. Even as Von Schiller watched, one of the giant tropical eels thrust its head through the surface, and its teeth gleamed like broken glass as it gaped wide, and then locked its jaws onto Nahut's throat. Nahut made no effort to tear the creature away. He was too far gone. He stared at Von Schiller all the while that the eel, twisting and rolling into a gleaming ball of slimy coils, still hung from his throat. Slowly, Nahut's head sank below the surface again. For long minutes, the pool was agitated by the movements in its depth and the occasional gleam of one of the serpentine fish. Then gradually, the surface settled as still and serene as a sheet of black glass. Von Schiller turned and ran, back up the incline shaft, past the landing on which the generator still puttered quietly, blindly trying to get as far away as he could from that dreadful pool. He did not know where he was going, but followed any passageway that opened in front of him. At the foot of the central stairway, he ran into the corner of the wall and stunned himself, falling to the agate tiles and lying there blubbering as a large purple lump rose on his forehead. After a while, he dragged himself to his feet and lurched up the stairs. He was confused and disorientated, his mind starting to break up in delirium, driven over the edge of sanity by horror and fear. He fell again and crawled along the tunnel on his hands and knees to the next corner of the maze. Only then was he able to regain his feet to stagger onwards. The steep shaft leading down into Taita's gas trap opened under his feet without him seeing it. He fell down the steps, jarring and bruising his legs and chest. Then he was on his feet again, reeling across the storeroom past the ranks of amphorae, up the far staircase and into the painted arcade that led to the tomb of Pharaoh Mamose. He had tottered down half the length of it, dishevelled and wild-eyed and demented, when suddenly the lights dimmed for a moment, fading to a yellow glow. Then they brightened again as the generator sucked the last drops of fuel from the bottom of the tank. Von Schiller stopped in the centre of the arcade and looked up at the lights with despair. He knew what was coming. For another few minutes the bulbs burned on, bright and cheerful. And then again they dimmed and faded. The darkness settled over him like the heavy velvet folds of a funeral pall. It was so intense and complete that it seemed to have a physical weight and texture. He could taste the darkness in his mouth as it seemed to force its way into his body and suffocate him. He ran again, wildly and blindly, losing all sense of direction in the blackness. He crashed headlong into stone and fell again, stunned. He could feel the warm tickle of blood running down his face, and he could not breathe. He whimpered and gasped, and slowly, lying on his side, he curled himself into a ball like a fetus in the womb. He wondered how long it would take him to die, and his soul quailed as he knew that it might take days and even weeks. He moved slightly, cuddling in closer to the stone object with which he had collided. In the darkness he had no way of telling that it was the great sarcophagus of Mamose that sheltered him. Thus he lay in the darkness of the tomb, surrounded by the funeral treasures of an emperor, and waited for his own slow but inexorable death.